Now, Rabos, I found a few things that I wanted to attach to our previous maftechos, as we call them, and then get back to what we discussed yesterday and see if we can expand on that. A few weeks ago, we discussed kvius tiv hamaseh, determining the nature of the action. Is it an act of a mitzvah, or it's a legal act, but it's not a mitzvah? And we gave a whole slew of examples of that chakira back then. Now I want to add another interesting case, which I found, that I think will again elaborate or embellish that kind of a structure. The halach is, of course, that there's a mitzvah midrabanan of checking the house for chametz on the 14th of Nisan. But what happens in a case wherever, for whatever reason, he checks his house on the 13th of Nisan? And the halacha requires that if he does so, he has to use an Or HaNer, and that's called Bidika Kodem Zmana, before its time. It's on the 13th of Nisan. How do we define that Bidika? There are two ways of going. We can either say, A, it's a Maisa Mitzvah, or B, it's not a Maisa Mitzvah at all. It's just a legal act, a Maisa Bedika, without a Kiyuma Mitzvah, and the purpose, the goal of that halachic Maisa Mitzvah, Maisa Bedika, which is not a Mitzvah, is to transform the house into a Bayis Baduk, such that now I no longer have to make another bedika. So if, for example, I know that I won't be able to make a bedika on Yudalid, I don't want to be in a situation where my house is a bayis she'eno baduk, and then I can't have access, I can't enjoy my house. What I do in such a case is I make a bedika on Yud Gimel. The question now is, and this is a diyun in poskim, in Orachayim Simon Tov Lamed Gimel, Sif Yud Aleph, do you make a bracha on a bedika on Yud Gimel? And the answer is, it depends. If that bedika is a maisa bedika, sheyesh lo kiyum, it's a kiyum mitzvah bedika, then I understand why you'd make a bracha on it. If, on the other hand, the definition of this bedika is just a legal act, the purpose, the goal of which is to convert the bias into a bias baduk, so that he no longer needs a subsequent bedika, then if that be the case, on a maisa bedika alone, you don't recite a bracha. So that was something that I wanted to add to what we discussed then. Now, yesterday, we came to the conclusion, based on Rav Bloch, that tells Rosh Hashiva, Rebellion, that if a person is involved in a mitzvah asay, then when you talk about being mevatel a mitzvah asay, even if you did it with a maisa, that's not considered a kumva asay. That's not considered, as he calls it, a davar chiyuvi. It's not a positive thing, because when he puts on the beged, even though you and I see an action, and there's no tzitzis on the beged, so it looks like he's being mevatel the essay by an action, and that would change the law of kavod abrios, as we discussed yesterday. Says Rav Bloch, no, the law of kavod abrios is not affected here, because it's always considered shevi altas, it's always considered head there, the chisaron, the absence, rather than something positive. Why is that? Because the Torah says, do something, right? Fulfill something, implement an action. And the Torah is not saying that you're actively not doing something. There's no such thing as a kumvaseh of not doing something. So you may remember that from yesterday. Today, I wanted to add a Ravid in Hilchas Brachos into the equation. The Ravid is talking about the mitzvah of Hanochas Tefillin, and he addresses the following scenario. The man put on his pair of Tefillin without making a bracha, and the Ravid wants to know, can he still make the bracha on the Tefillin, or must he remove the Tefillin and put them on again? And the reason for the suffix in the Ravid is because we have a principle that a bracha has to be over l'asiyah, son. The bracha has to come before the asiyah. And here, since he's already put on his tefillin, he no longer has an asiyah. So the bracha can't be attached to an asiyah. Says the Ravid, no. He can make the bracha. As soon as he reminds himself that he forgot to make a bracha, is adayin mivarech laniach, he can still say the bracha laniach tefillin. And the reason for that is because, I don't know, what is the reason for that? Do you hear my question? What basis or what logic would compel the Ravid to come to the conclusion that even after the action was done, and I've already put on the tefillin, I could still make a bracha laniach tefillin?
Why not? Because every minute is a continuous mitzvah.
So is it a continuous mitzvah with an asiyah, or it's a continuous mitzvah b'shevi altaseh? Meaning,
what's the halacha by Hanukkah? The halacha is a mitzvah. Let's say he forgot to make a bracha.
Right, so then he can't make a bracha. Once he lit the candle, he can't make a bracha. Or for example, after the man gave the tabas to the isha, he reminds himself he didn't make a bracha. It's too late. Masha asa asa. The bracha always has to come on the asiyah.
What's the difference between Hanukkah and
tefillin?
So Hanukkah is with the halakha.
So we're trying to understand, why is it that in the case of tefillin, why is it in the case of tefillin, the Ravid is willing to justify the bracha laniach even after he's already put on the tefillin? Whereas in other mitzvahs, after you've already implemented the mitzvah, it's too late to make the bracha. That's my question. Let's say, for example, I was mafresh truma. I can't make the bracha. I was already mafresh. You need over lasi yosla. Masha asa asu. So I have here a note, okay, a note that when the Rav Zichron Levracha taught Psachim, there's a whole sugya about Birchas HaMitzvah and Dav Zayin in Psachim, that he said the following, that if the Torah requires an ongoing kium, and the state of being which generated that ongoing kium came about through a maisa, then that maisa continues halachically to be considered a maisa even when the body of the person is doing nothing. I thought to myself, we have the famous kasha in Muki Yosef about lighting Shabbos candles. You remember the kasha? It's Isho Mishum Chitzov, and therefore he's lighting the fire on Shabbos. He lit the fire, and now it's continuously his lighting. It's as if his Maisa continues because the candle is still lit. Okay, the answer of the Muki Yosef has to be understood. Why we're allowed to light candles every Shabbos? But a similar thing here in the Ravid. The Ravid is saying that since the Kiyum of Tefillin is through the Maisa, but the Kiyum of Tefillin is not the Maisa itself, it's having the Tefillin on my body, that the Hayu is brought about through a Maisa. Chazal established a Bracha on the Hayu. Why? Because since the Vahayu comes about through a Hanocha, through an active Asiyah of Hanochas Tefillin, then the Rav wants to say that the situation that evolves and results from that original action is considered an ongoing action. So in the case of Hadlaka, let's say for example, Ner Shabbos or Ner Chanukah that Dr. Tarrigan mentioned before, there, once I did the Maisa, then my Kiyum is complete. The Torah doesn't require me to continuously have it. We paskin kofsa ein zakuk. If it goes out, he fulfilled his mitzvah. Hadlaka is the mitzvah. But in the case of tefillin, where the Torah requires me to have tefillin on my body, here is a chiddush. The Rav wants to be machadish that the hanocha is an ongoing hanocha. The Torah says that every second that the tefillin are on my body as a result of my original hanocha, because I didn't remove my hanocha, it continues, it's considered like I did a maisa hanocha, and therefore I can make the bracha over l'asiyah, son. So I was thinking, is the Rav's chiddush contradicting Rav Bloch? That's what I wanted to ask you. Because again, Rav Bloch says that in the case of a mitzvah saseh, there's no such thing as creating an asiyah. There is no such thing as creating an asiyah. But the answer, I believe, is poshut. Rav Bloch is talking about what? About bittul kiyum esei. A bittul kiyum esei, he holds, is always b'shei ve'al tase. The Ravid is talking about a kiyum esei. Not a bittul esei, but a kiyum esei. And the Ravitz Kiddush is that I could be Makayim an essay, even though my body is in a passive position. The halacha considers it as if there's an asiyah. I can make a bracha of Ladniach. And why? Because that hanacha is an ongoing hanacha, and every second that I have the hanacha, it's considered I did the Maisa hanacha. And I suggest that maybe, the source for this Ravid is a sugya in Nazir. What do I mean? The Nazir went into the Beis HaKvaras, and now we give him a hasra, and we say, you better get out of there. You're not allowed to be in the Beis HaKvaras. And he refuses. He remains in the Beis HaKvaras. So the Gemara says that he gets Malkus for that. And the question is, that's a Lav Shein Bo Maisa.
He doesn't do anything.
He passively remains in the cemetery. He doesn't get out of the cemetery. So why should he get Malkus for such a thing? So I wanted to suggest, based on this Raivin, that maybe since he entered into the cemetery, again, if he fell from the, you know, from an airplane, you know, in a parachute, that's something different. But if he walked into the cemetery, then continuously being in the cemetery is a continuous Maisa. The Maisa of Bia, of entering into the cemetery, is an ongoing Maisa. And every second that he refuses to leave the cemetery, it's as if he entered into the cemetery, and he can get Malkus for the original Maisa of entering into the cemetery.
Not doctor, because you could always say that until he has Hasra, it's really not a bona fide Maisa.
That's correct. Because until he has Hasra, you can't give him Malkus and say, well, he stays, he continues to be in the cemetery.
The question is, why can't you give him Malkus? Is it a legal situation, or is it the fact that it's not considered anything? It's not considered a Maisa. So therefore, after the Asura, the Maisa really starts.
Right, well, the truth is, I don't know the answer to your question. I do know that Hasra is an absolute requirement for Malkus.
Meaning,
I can't paskin on your shackle. Is it the Hasra that makes the mice into a mice? I would say...
No, because you get cars with Hasra.
I would say that his decision, Sam, I don't know if you agree with me or not, his decision to remain inside the cemetery as a result, and continuing his original entering into the cemetery, that itself makes his matzav, his situation, into a mice. But you can't give Malkus without Asra, so you need Asra, and therefore, hence the din that if you give him Asra. Okay. Now, I wanted to throw out another possibility as an example of what we discussed yesterday. And that is there such a thing in Reb Chaim as a Dover Chiyuvi? Right? We pointed out that Rav Zevin, in his biography about Rav Chaim Brisker, emphasizes that Rav Chaim was very, very reserved, or shall I say inhibited, and when I say very, I mean extremely inhibited, about using terminology that comes from the world of philosophy. And all the terminology and all the lumdish jargon according to Rav Chaim has to come within. It has to be local. It has to be in Shas itself. If it's outside of Shas, then you can't use that terminology. But we suggested that despite the fact that Rav Chaim doesn't employ those terms, nevertheless he's using those concepts. And I thought that one great example of Rav Chaim using a concept of Dover Chiyuvi versus Dover Shlili, meaning the absence of something or a positive force that generates the din, would be the concept of Hafka. Hafka, Rav Chaim wants to say, I think, is a Dover Shlili, meaning Hafka means that you're not up to par, you're lacking or absent are the conditions that are necessary to create a certain din. That's called Hafka. For example, in the case of a Cheri Shot of a Katan, we say that their Maisa Kinyan is not valid. We don't have to add a new positive feature to say, well, he became a Cheresh and therefore he's excluded. No. It's a Hafka. Hafka means he's a La Bardas. Hafka means we don't have the wherewithal, we don't have the, you know, the das that's necessary in order to create a kinyan or a bar hachi of kinyan. So that's called a hafka. For example, we discussed yesterday that there's a certain concept called a siman tuma. A siman tuma tells me that as far as kashrus laws is concerned, this species, this animal, is mufka. It's afka. He's mufka from kashrus. You could take, for example, we'll talk about this in Mirza Shem a little later today, psue kol. Psue kol meaning they don't have the kedusha as far as kol is concerned of a ben Yisrael. That's called a hafka. You could talk about a cholol as far as kahuna. He's mufka from kahuna. So the emphasis here is not on an action. The emphasis is on the reality of the situation that it's a hafka. That's called heder. Heder means we're absent something. On the other hand, we said that in the case of Bailus Shal Akum Bibeged, Bibeged Sheesh Podalik Kanfos, there we wanted to suggest that the ownership of the Akum is not just a Hafka, it's not just that we're absent the Bailus of Yisrael, even if the Yisrael owns enough of the Talis, which would generate a sheer talis, he would still be part of Fensitis. Why? Because it's a brand new din, a kumbase, or what we call a dor chiyuvi, which is a poter. The bailus of a guy, even on the tippy-tippy end of the talis, is a poter. And that might be true even as far as Trumas of Maestros is concerned, that if the guy owns the tvua, or if the guy does a digun, you know, he winnows the grains, that's called a poter. That's what we wanted to suggest. Now, Rav Soloveitchik, I think, added a whole new element into the equation. And he wanted to suggest that sometimes it's not a poter, but rather a kium. Now, what does that mean? Sometimes you can ask the question, do you need a certain requirement and you have it? Or you don't need it at all. And I heard this from him in the Shiurim on Masechet Bava Kama on Daf Dalet. There's a sugya there called Kimlei B'Derabamina. It appears many places, but on Daf Dalet, there's a very interesting Tosfos there in the name of the Riva. And Tosfos on Daf Dalet, Dibra Maskel Karoi, wonders about the definition of Kimlei B'Derabamina. Is it the pshat that since he has an onesh chamur, the onesh chamur is a poter that exempts him from the onesh kal? Or do we say no? The way the Rav wanted to interpret the answer of the Riva to his question, Kimlei B'Derabamina means that the onesh chamur is considered an onesh even on the lesser avera. It's not that you don't need an onesh on the lesser avera. It's not like there's a poter and somehow the lesser violation disappears. No, that's not what we're saying. But rather we're saying something totally different. We're saying that the onesh on the chamur is a sort of an umbrella that creates a kium of the onesh even on the kal. Okay, I'm just going to... I wanted to give another possible example of Reb Chaim using this distinction between something that's positive or the absence of something, and that's negative. So this is Reb Chaim in Isurei Bia, Perek Yud Zayin Halacha Beis. And that should appear on page 29. In the classical edition of Reb Chaim in Rashi script. And Reb Chaim wants to answer the Ravitz question on the Rambam. The Rambam paskins that a Kohen who marries a woman, there are three categories of ladies that they're not allowed to marry, a Zona, Grusha, or Chalola. The Torah says Lo Yikachu. So the Rambam says that you need two things in order to violate this law and get Malkus. You need, number one, that the Kohen went ahead and married such a woman. And that's what the Torah means when it says, Lo Yikachu. Kicha means marriage. And number two, he requires the Rambam Be'ila. He has to be Baal. So when he has A plus B, then he gets Malkus. That's as far as a regular Kohen is concerned. Then the Rambam says that if a Kohen Gadol has a relationship with an Almana, then even if there wasn't a kiddushin, just the be'ilah itself, then he gets malchus. And the reason for that is the Torah says lo yechalel, which means kevan shebala chilala upasla lakuna. In the first case, he had a relationship with a zona, grusha chalala, she's already psula lakuna, even before the maisa be'ila. So the be'ila doesn't change her status in any way. And therefore, there's no violation of lo yechalel, and there's only malchus for the lav of lo yikachu. In the case of Almanu L'Kohen Gadol, on the other hand, the Be'ila itself is Mechalil her, and as a result of the Maisa Chilul, the Rambam says she gets what's called Mischaleles, and therefore there's a law of violation of Lo Yechalel, and as a result she becomes a Zona that's Psula L'Kohuna, that's called Lo Yechalel, because again, up until this point, she can marry a Kohen. She's only an Almona. She's not a Grusha. But after the Kohen Gadol had a relationship with her, then that relationship, which is called an Iser Kahuna, is Mechalel her. And if it's Mechalel her that she can no longer marry a Kohen, she now becomes a Zona Le Kahuna, then the Kohen Gadol has violated the Lav of Lo Yechalel. So he'll get Malkus for the Lav of Lo Yechalel, even without marrying her first, because again, the bee itself is Mechalel her and engenders the status of a Zona such that she can no longer marry a Kohen. Then the Rambam says, and this is the punchline of our discussion for today, Avol Zona V'Chalolu Grusha Harehen Mechulolos V'Omdos Kodem Be'iloso. Therefore, there's no violation of the Lav of Lo Yechalel, because when the Kohen had a relationship with a Zona, Chalol, and a Grusha, if he didn't violate Lo Yikachu, which means there was no previous marriage relationship, it was just a Be'ila, then you want to tell me that the Kohen in such a case should be Chayav Malkus because he violated Lo Yechalel? Says the Rambam, no. Harehen Mechulolos V'Omdos Kodem Be'iloso. So it means that the only case where within the broader framework of Kahuna, the Isuri Kahuna, where there would be Malkus for a Maisa Be'ilah alone without Kiddushin, that's only according to the Rambam in the case of Almana L'Kohen Gadol, because in the case of Almana L'Kohen Gadol, he's Mechalel her as a Zona L'Kahuna, and he violates the Lav of Lo Yechalel, and as such, he gets Malkus for violating Lo Yechalel. But the other Isuri Kahuna, for example, a Kohen is not allowed to have a relation with a Zona, Chalon, and Legrusha. In that case, the woman, even before his Be'ilah, was already Mechuleles V'Omedes, and therefore there's no violation of the Lav of Lo Yechalel. And the Rambam says, under those circumstances, there could only possibly be Malkus for the Lav of Lo Yikachu, which requires marriage first, and then Be'ilah second.
What's the halacha by a Kohen if it says, Kim Besulam V'Amo Yikachisha? So, isn't this woman the Mechulelet to begin with?
She's the only Mechulelet to Kohen Gadol. But if the Kohen Gadol goes ahead and has a relationship with her, now we add a new status.
She's a Mechulelet.
And she can no longer marry a Kohen. Any Kohen, even a Kohen Ezra. And that's a result of the fact that Isuri Kahuna, once they're violated, they generate what's called a status of a Zona. And a Zona is... So his Bia, in the case of a Kohen Gadol Almona, created a Psul Chalolus, and that's a violation of the Lav of Lo Yechalel, for which you get Malkus. But in the case of a Zona Chalola and Grusha, there she's already Mechuleles V'Omedes, as such, she cannot marry a Kohen. So when he has beer with her, he doesn't violate the Lav of Lo Yechalel. No, you're going to tell me if she was Mechuleles V'Omedes, okay, he doesn't violate Lo Yechal, but let him violate the Lav of Isha Zonam Grusha Chalol Lo Yikachu. Says the Rambam, he will get Malkus for that, but that's conditional on the fact of Lo Yikachu, that first there's a marriage relationship and then he has Be'ilu with her. What's the Ravid's kasha? The Ravid says that in addition to the Lav of Lo Yechal, there's another Lav. There are really three Lav in here. And there's another law in the Torah that says, Lo Yechalel Zaro. Now, you should know that the difference between Lo Yechal Zaro and Lo Yechalel has to do with what's called Tchilas Bia and Sof Bia. As far as Lo Yechal is concerned, any Bia will suffice. And Tchilas Bia, which is otherwise known as Hara, is enough to passel her. And therefore, let's say, for example, if a Kohen would have, he went ahead and he married a Zona, and then he had a relationship with her after he married her, then he would be chayav for Tchilas Bia. However, in the case of Lo Yechal Zaro, as a separate lav, there you need Sof Gmar Bia. Of course, it has to be a Bia that could create Zera. And therefore, it's Lo Yechal Zaro. So the Rambam wants to know, okay, fine. The Rambam has given us a logically compelling reason why there's no Malkus for Lo Yechalel in the case of a Zona Chalola Grusha. She's already Mechulel as Momedes. He wasn't Mechalel. But what about the lav of Lo Yechal Zara? Because if he had a Gemar Bia with her, now from that Gemar Bia he may have Zera, and then he's being Mechal his Zera. So why is it that there's no Malkus for that lav? And the Rambam says that in the case of Zona Chalola of Ugrusha, there's only Malkus for Lo Yikachu. The Rambam answers the question why there's no Malkus for Lo Yechalel, because she's already Mechulelis Momedes. But what about Malkus for the lav of Lo Yechal Zaro? That's the Ravid's kasha. So this you'll see on the left column on page 29. Because this is a massive Reb Chaim. I just want to get to one particular lumdus in Reb Chaim, and therefore I'm trying to shorten the task. So in the top paragraph on the left column on page 27, he says, Dasim. Okay, what line you're asking?
29,
I meant to say, sorry. And I thought you were asking me what line, but if, in case you asked me what line, I would say it's about 10 lines down, maybe 15 lines down. The first word of the line is Kshera. And he says, Das Arayvid, Sovedu Gemar Bia, Mio Machayev Bekul. There should be a Chiyuv Malkus even in the case of Azona Grusha V'Chalola, not only in the case of Almona L'Kohen Gadol. And why is that? Mishum chiul hazera, d'lo avi mechul v'omedes. In other words, we don't have the zera yet. You know that we could say that the zera was already mechul. He through his bia is bringing into the world a zera mechul. So therefore, he should get malchus for violating the law of lo yechal zara. V'zeu shehisig al Rambam, and therefore the Ravid argues against the Rambam. Shepasak, because the Rambam paskins the begrusha zon v'chalola miftar liola. That without marriage, without a pre, you know, a yikachu, there will never be malchus, and that's not true. Again, it won't be malchus betchilas bia, because that would only be a lav of lo yechalel, and lo yechalel doesn't apply here because zona grusha chalol is already mechulel es omedes. But why does the Rambam say that she never gets malchus, or he never gets malchus in the case of Kohen with a zona? As on the contrary, b'gmar bia also. In terms of the Gemar Bia, then he should violate the law of Lo Yechal Zaro, Veleka Taima, the Mechul V'Omed. You can't say that she's already Mechulelis. Okay, she's Mechulelis, but the Zera was not Mechulel. He brought a Zera Mechulel into the world. Now again, we're going to fast forward here to get to the answer of the Rambam, of Reb Chaim on the Rambam. So if you're looking on page Lamed, there's a paragraph that starts Vehine, and again, it's a long discussion here, but we're going to just focus on line number 4 just as an example of what Reb Chaim wants to convey. And Reb Chaim says that Niv'elis L'cholol Nases Zona. What does that mean? A woman, and it doesn't matter whether she's a Bas Kohen or she's what we call a Zora, Zayin Reish Hei, meaning she has no Shaykhus Tekuna at all. If she had a Maisa Bia with a Kohen who's a cholol, that makes her into a zona. And here you don't require kiddushin. It's the maisa bi itself that generates a psul called zona. So Reb Chaim in the next paragraph, Lefiyah Mavur, clarifies that there are two fundamentally different categories of isurei kahuna. There's one isur kahuna which is inherent in the maisa bi'ila. And that creates a psul. That if you take a look at the first line, he says, Trei dinim heim. One is paslus shel chalolus, and two is mishpachas kalolas. Now, what's the difference? They sound identical. Where is Reb Chaim coming from? It sounds like he's splitting hairs. What's the difference between paslus shel kalolas and mishpachas kalolas? So we'll see in a minute how Reb Chaim develops that, but just understand the words. Paslus shel kalolas means that a woman becomes psula as a result of a maisa bia haposelis. Then is something called mishpachas chalolos. And that has to do not with the maisa bia, but the fact that the mishpacha and the relationships within the mishpacha, or the kinship, whatever word you want to use, is that of chalolos. And that's Reb Chaim's fundamental distinction. Let's see if we can flesh it out and see how Reb Chaim applies this distinction. He says, "Nicha das haramba b'meshek pasuk de begrusha zonim chalola eino loke af mishum chilul zera." Why is there no malchus for the love of lo sechal zara? After all, through this gemara bia with a grusha zonim chalola, he's creating a child who will be excluded from kahuna because of chalol. So he violates the law of lo yechal zara. The answer is no. Nira. Apparently, the Rambam holds the law divlo yechalel ha'omer bechilul zera hugak al chilul shel paslus. Remember, the Rambam, the Reb Chaim suggested two categories. There's something called paslus, and then there's something called mishpachas. What's the difference between paslus and mishpacha? Paslus means that as a result of the maisa bia generates a new psul. Mishpacha, he says, is not a din of a maisa bia that generates a psul, but rather it's simply a hafka mi mishpachas kahuna. In other words, the child of a grusha zona v'chalola, if she had a relationship with a kohen, is called a chalol. How does that chalolus emerge? How is it generated? Says Reb Chaim, through mishpachas chalolus, meaning she is related to her father and mother. The father and the mother have a relationship of chalolus. She, the mother, is a chalola. The child now becomes a chalol or a chalola. That's called mishpachas chalolus. Mishpachas kahuna.
It's not that the bia does it, it's just that
exactly.
The child,
it's not
the child of the mother.
Correct.
And she happens to be a chalola, so she's the child is a descendant of the chalola.
Right. So Reb Chaim wants to suggest the following. When does a kohen violate a lav of lo yechal zaro? That's because he does an act of chilul zaro. But if there's already a mishpacha of chalolus, then the reason why the zera is mechulal is because of the mishpachas chalolus. It's not a result of a bia haposelis. So let's see the language of Reb Chaim again inside. He says, Yesod halav, this is in the paragraph of Lefi, line 7. Yesod halav shalo yechal el zaro, koi, oh, he says the following. How do I know that when the, okay, so this is a little bit tricky here, because you remember that there were two lav. There was a lav lo yechal el, and then there was a lav of lo yechal zaro. So take, for example, the case of Kohen Gadol, who has a relationship with an almana. In that case, we say that the Kohen Gadol gets malchus for that bia under the law, violation of the law of lo yechal. What does lo yechal mean? He took this almana and he passeled her. What does it mean he passeled her? I mean, an almana can't marry a Kohen Gadol anyway. He didn't create that psul, but the answer is...
she knows her name is to a Kohen.
Right, she can't marry any Kohen because she becomes a zona. That's a violation of lo yechal. So there's a beautiful example, says Reb Chaim, where there's no what we call mishpachas chalolus over here, because after all, this almana is she's not even part of kahuna, so you can't call it mishpachas chalolus. The answer is that the violation of the law is for the maisa bia haposelis, because the bia of a kohen gadol to an almana generates a psul of zona. and that's inherent in the beer. And by the way, if it's inherent in the beer, then our standards for beer allow for even Tchilas beer. He never even finished his beer, but that's a beer in Kol Tokula, and it passes her, this almana, for Kohen, for Kohuna, for Kohen Hejo, for Torah's owner, and therefore the Kohen Gadol gets Malchus for that. Oh. Now we have to ask, what about the Lo Yechal Zara? Says Reb Chaim, the Rambam sheet is that Lo Yechal Zara is an offshoot, so to speak, it's a tolva of Lo Yechal. And your paradigm case of Chilul is the lav of Lo Yechal. And as we defined before, the lav of Lo Yechal is violated by a Maisa Bia, and that Maisa Bia is a Bia Apostelis. The same thing applies to Lo Yechal Zara, except for one proviso. It's got to be a Gemara Bia, because otherwise it doesn't lend itself to Zara. But barring that one distinction, fundamentally, essentially, it's the same kind of lav. It's a lav of a bia haposelis. That's what Reb Chaim calls paslus shel chalolos. And this lav is violated as a result of the bia. Now, Reb Chaim has an interesting proof over here. He says the following: Yisod olav shelo yechalel hakoy gam al chilul deisha. Right? Who does he violate, so to speak, or desecrate or create chalolos with? He's creating chalolos with a zara. She's not even mimishpachas kahuna. So how can you tell me that he violates a lav lo yechalel b'toris mishpachas chalolos when she's not even part of kahuna? She's a zara, right? Zara zayin reish hey. The answer must be that it's inherent in the bia. The bia itself is a bia haposeles, and therefore he violates the lav of lo yechalel. Says Reb Chaim, hu adin gam bechil zera. To a lav de lo yechalel gam ki mash mechal zaro. He says, just like you have a lav of lo yechalel, which regard to the isha, you also have a lav of lo yechalel zaro. But just like in the lav of Lo Yechal, we said it's the bia poseles, and therefore that lav would not apply to the case of zona grusha v'chalala, but it would apply to a zara, because even though she doesn't have mishpachas kuhuna, but there is a paslus that he's being machadish, she's generating a new paslus through his bia, making her into a zona. That's a violation of the lav of Lo Yechal. Hu adin gam bechil zera. The lav of Lo Yechal Zaro is also included under Lo Yechal, meaning it's an extension of that lav. Vugam ke mashem echal Zaro bipsul. Bipsul meaning he's adding a new psul, the isa l'kuhuna, right? Creating a new status. Abel bechil shal hafkas mishpachas kuhuna lespe azharav Lo Yechal. What was the Rebbe's problem? The Rebbe wants to say, okay, you don't want to give a Malkus for Lo Yechalel because she's what? She's already Mechuleles, Viomedes. I'm talking the case of Grusha Zon Mechalola. But at Chush, admit to me that she should be generating Malkus because Lo Yechal Zaro. After all, the Zera doesn't exist. Says Reb Chaim, you don't understand, Rabbi Rebbe. You're missing the point. The Lo Yechal Zaro is a continuation of Lo Yechal. And just like Lo Yechal means he created a paslus and an isa lakuna through his bia, so too, in the case of Lo Yechal Zaro, he's creating a brand new paslus. Therefore, that could not apply in the case of Grusha Zon V'Chalola, because it's not the bia that's creating a new paslus, it's that this is Zera of Sule Kahuna. And Reb Chaim's language, he says, that's a chil of hafkas mishpachas kuhuna. Interesting that Reb Chaim adds the word hafka, because again, it's not the kumva se, it's not the dobra chiyuvi of the maisa bila that generates a psul. No, there's hafkas mishpachas kuhuna here. By virtue of the lineage, there's a family that's completely mufka from kuhuna. The children of Mufka from Kuna, that's not a violation of Lo Yechal Zaro. And therefore the Rambam holds you don't get Malkus. And if you turn to page 30, again we're going to try to shorten this process. He says, on line 4, he says there's a din of paslus shel chalolus, meaning that you actively create a new psul of chalolus. And on that there's a lav of lo yechalel, but there's no lav with regard to the din of chil shel mishpachas hafkas kahuna. That's not included in the azar of lo yechalel because the mishpacha is mufka from kahuna. And I think when he says mufka from kahuna, he's talking about the absence of a dor chiyuvi, meaning you don't have its head there. You know, there's not a new maisa posel, but rather it's hafka from kahuna. So once again, I want to point out that Reb Chaim is using the distinction between something positive and active on the one hand and the absence of something on the other hand, which I call shlili. But in addition, I see that Reb Chaim uses the word hafka in a very particular way. Hafka means when you don't have the goods, as I say. You don't have the wherewithal or the conditions that are necessary to be included in the din. Here, because you're coming from a mishpacha mechulelis, then there's already a chilul in the mishpacha. There wasn't a maisa for which we could mechayev him for an averus hazara of lo yechal zar. That's what I thought. Now, if you take a look in Rav Zevin, you have Rav Zevin a photocopy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a look on page 54. Rav Zevin claims that he found an example of chiyuvi and shlili, again without the use of the terminology, in a shir that Rav Chaim gave that was recorded in the stencil of Rav Chaim. He calls it in footnote number 25, Chidushov Shebiksuvim. In other words, not something that he wrote and he authored in the Reb Chaim, but rather in the writings of the Talmidim. And this is interesting. There's a halacha of a prohibition in Afrosha's Truma of being Tore min ara al hayofe. In other words, you have very good quality fruits. You don't want to take off any of that for the Kohen, because you're too stingy for that. So you want to use a lower quality of produce and use that to be mafrish onto the office. So you don't have to be mafrish from the office. You're not allowed to do such a thing. So Rav Chaim raises the following chakira, which I think is, according to Rav Zevin at least, chiyuve and shlili. He wants to know, what's the nature of this iser? Is it an iser per se, the act of hafrashim and ara from a low quality produce, that's what the Torah is objecting to, or no? It's the head there, it's the absence of the mafrish min ayofa. Like, for example, let's say you were mafrish min ara al ayofa, and then you could do another afrosha. Rav Chaim says that's impossible for mitzvahs. But if it were possible, you could do a second afrosha, then you would not have violated the iser of afrosha min ara, because that iser is only the absence of being Torah min ayofa. And now, even after he was mafrish min ara, he was mafrish min ayofa. So then he fulfills his chiyuv. It's almost as if Reb Chaim is defining in his second definition the iser of being mafrish min ara as a bittul esei. It's the absence of something. It's not a kumva asei, that what a chutzpah norah it is that you gave the kohen tvua ra. No, that's not the problem. The problem is that your chiyuv and your mitzvah is to give min hayofa, and you didn't give min hayofa. If you went ahead and you gave him a ra, and then you could give him a yofa, you'd be fine. It's like, if I can give a mashal, the case of chadash l'mizbeach, right? So that your mitzvah is to take the chadash and bring it on the mizbeach. If you brought min chadash, if you brought min chadash before the shtel lechem, then the shtel lechem is not a kiyum of chadash, because there's already been a mincha that's brought over here. There's no special isur of bringing min chadash before the shtel lechem, right? It's only that by virtue of the fact that you brought min chadash shtel lechem. Well, I'll give you an example. There's halacha of osel litom konim kiddush. You're not allowed to taste anything before kiddush. There's no Isur in eating before Kiddush. The problem is that Kiddush has to be the kickoff of your Suda. And if you've already eaten already, then you've been pogea in the kiyum of Kiddush. And the same thing, I think, Reb Chaim is applying here. There's no separate Isur of being mafresh min ara. And in fact, if you had ra and ra, you would be mafresh min ara, because it's low quality. But the problem is that the yofeh generates a kiyum of mina yofeh, and that he's not mekayim. Says Reb Chaim, lu yitzur, if there would be a possibility, the achar hafresh min ara, yofeh lichom od pa min yofeh, is ein kan Isur klal. El sheyef shadav mitzias darei ein truma, we achar truma.
You could maybe have a kind of question. Truma, you're allowed to give more than the minimum, right? Mm-hmm. So if you give a lot and you include both the offer and the psalis, but it's possible that giving psalis is not a problem.
Correct, because he gave him a yofa.
Maybe.
Excellent. So Reb Chaim wants to explain.
If you're going to Lo Yitzur, I have a better Lo Yitzur for you.
Yeah.
If you're tearing him in a ra and it becomes yofa. You give it, you put it on the side, and something happens, it ripens or whatever.
Yeah.
So you don't have to come on to it, mafresh or chodesh or mafresh.
So now my question to you is, how does Reb Chaim know, how can he establish and prove that it's the second definition, that it's not an avera to give to be tor min ara, but rather it's just a head there, it's just the absence of giving min ayof. So it's based, he says, on a Gemara in Kiddushin, on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, and that should be footnote number 23. The Gemara says over there that what happens with the Eved if he went ahead and he was mafresh min ara ala yofa. So the Gemara says Trumaso Truma, that with the Eved is Truma is Chal. How do we know this? So the Gemara derives it from a drasha. Shenema lo tisu olav chait beharimchem eschelbo mimen. Notice you should not violate a sin when you fail to bring chelbo. Chelbo means bina yof. So the Gemara darshins im eno kadosh. If you're telling me that the afrasha was worthless, right? Is nesius chait lama? So Tosis asks, I don't get what the Gemara's drasha is all about. We passing like Rava, and Rava says called Milsa the Omer Achmana Lo Sabati Ovid Lomahani, meaning that when you violate a lav, it's not because it's chal, it's Lomahani, it's not chal because you violated the Torah law. But even though it's not chal, the Torah says you're chayav because of your desire to violate the Torah law. Loka Mishum Di Omer Amemra De Achmana. That's the Suyin Tmura. So Ach Khan says to us, why don't we say the same thing? Li olam his truma is not chal. Why does it say that he violates an Isur? Because he wanted to create truma min ara. But who says, how does the Gemara prove that the truma is not chal? Says Reb Chaim, I can answer Tosis Kasha. Kola Isur, the Isur is not by virtue of what he did do, meaning that he was mafresh min ara. Ella, I tried to add the Aleph over there, it was missing in the text. Ella, b'meshalo asa. But rather because he didn't give truma min ayofa. Im ken, kishen nomar she'ein trumas achala. If you're going to tell me that he was mafresh min ara, now it's invalid and it's meaningless. So then why did he undermine the kiyum of giving min ayofa? Now he'll be mafresh min ayofa. Now here's a case where you can have afrasha after afrasha, right? Reb Chaim said that the metzius is no truma after truma. But in the Havamina, that hifresh min ara is not chal, then of course he can be mafresh truma a second time because the first time is invalid. And now in the second time he'll get it right and he'll be mafresh min ayofa. So why does he violate the lav and the isur of barimchem eschelbo mimenu? The answer must be that his truma was chal. Once it was chal, he has no possibility of fulfilling the essay and the kum of what? Of min ayofeh, because ain't truma ha truma, and that's why he violates this isur. So again, let's just go over the logic of Reb Chaim. You know, I'm so nispal from the power of his logic. You know, it's really brilliant. He says the following. True, Tosis is right. You can have cases where it's not chal, and yet you violate the isur. That's called, in Rava's language, i'avid lomahan. And therefore, Tosfos is right, even if the truma of ra le'yof is not chal, he could still be in violation of the law. Says Rav Chaim that Tosfos' kasha assumes a certain premise, which is apparently incorrect. The premise of Tosfos is that the violation of the law of the isur here is by being mafresh min ha-ra. And therefore Tosfos says, well, he can be mafresh min ha-ra. The truma is not chal, and yet he violates the isur because he ovid lo mahani, but he wanted to create a truma min ha-ra. And for that desire to create a truma min ha-ra, he violates the isur and he's chayim. Says Rav Chaim, that premise is incorrect. There's no isur being mafresh min ha-ra. Ain't no such thing. The Torah says, "Be mafresh min ha-yofa." And if you go ahead and you're mafresh min ha-ra, now you've made it impossible for yourself to be mafresh min ha-yofa. That only makes sense if trumas a truma. If trumas a truma, right? Let me get that again. Did I get the freshman? One second. Give me a second. Sorry. So again, the premise of Tosfos is that there's a violation of that. So then the truma could be even if the truma is chal, you could still be chay of a violation. But now what we're saying is that what? That became shekol usa el of a mashal loasim kain im nomar she'ain truma so chala. If then you're going to raise the Havamina that his truma is not chal, then the Gemara says very well, how does he violate the isur? Because now he can be mafresh min ha-yofer. So we have then a whole bunch of examples in Rav Chaim of chiyuve and shlili, even though Rav Chaim doesn't utilize that language, that lingo. Now, in these two essays, which we photocopied, one from Rav Zevin and one from Dr. Solomon, we find another philosophical distinction, and the question is, did it penetrate into into the Torah world? And that is Siba Umisovik. Excuse me. So you'll see it in Rav Zevin on page 54. And you'll see it in Midar Lidar, which is the only volume of tradition that they actually succeeded in translating. I think they only did one volume. Then they dropped the project. On page 24. Now, the two giants...
24?
24. You don't have it?
I just didn't Xerox 24.
Yeah, oh, I know why you didn't Xerox 24. Because 24 is history. Okay. Again, very interesting intellectual history, but it doesn't interest me, frankly, at this point in my life. So that's why I left out 24 and 25. You should have 26, correct?
Yeah.
Because I'm more interested in the actual cases. On 24 and 25, he has something called Siba Umisovev, and he lays out an entire history. And he basically gives credit to perhaps what we might call two schools of thought in what he calls the analytic methodology. One is the Telzer approach, and the other is Rav Shimon Shkup. There's a very definite relation between the two. So as far as the Talmidim of Telz is concerned, we have Rav Amiel, who wrote three volumes called Hamidot L'Cheker Halacha. And Rav Amiel dedicates almost an entire volume of the three volumes to this one philosophical question about Siba Umisovev, cause and effect. In the essay that we photocopied from Ishim V'Shitot, Rav Zevin is going to try to claim that although Rav Chaim certainly doesn't belong to that school of thought, that movement of Rav Amiel, as far as Siba Misovev, but claims Rav Zevin, without using the language of Siba Misofev, Rav Chaim has Siba Umisofev. And that's what Rav Zevin wants to prove. Now, I would like to do two things with you. I don't know how much time we have left, but in, let's say in the next year, if not in this year, number one, I want to analyze the two examples that Dr. Solomon brings for Siba Umisove from Tells and Rav Shimon Shkar respectively. And I would like to see what would be an example of Siba Misovev from Reb Chaim's perspective. Now it seems to me, and I don't understand, because I'm a big, gigantic fan of Rav Zevin, why he is sweating it out. And he comes up with a very complicated sugya about Mamzerus in Masechta Kiddushin, in order to justify his claim that Reb Chaim is well aware of the distinction between Siba Umisovev. To me, and I don't know if I'm missing something here, it's all over the place. Wherever you turn, it's Siba Umisovev. What do I mean? Reb Chaim, and that's the tradition that I was brought up in from my Rebbe Reb Soloveitchik, is always interested in asking what's the Machayev. And if I ask you what the Machayev is, I'm asking what generates the Chiyuv. In fact, one of the two examples that the professor here brings to Siva Misovev from Reb Shimon Shkop is what's the Machayev of Tashlumei Nezikin in Momen HaMazik? If I own a shor and it goes out in damage, why do I have to pay you, compensate you for damages? So Reb Shimon clears. Is the Machayev Pshia, because I wasn't watching my animal properly, or is the Machayev Bailus, the fact that I own the animal? And again, without getting into the details, this is a fundamental Chakira of Reb Shimon Shkop. And he's obviously asking, what's the Machayev? What generates the Chiyuv? Well, Reb Shimon Shkop is not the only Gadol Bisrael who asks what generates the Chiyuv. Reb Chaim always asks the question, what generates the Chiyuv? I made for myself a short list, for example, of what's the Machayev. Let's say, for example, mezuzah. There's an entire sugya in Pesachim. What's the Machayev of mezuzah? It's the ownership of the house or living in the house. So, for example, if I rent a house from you, am I Chayev of mezuzah? If it's Bailus, then you're Chayev mezuzah. You rented me the house, you own the house. If, on the other hand, it's living in the house, I'm living in the house as a socher. Another example. What's the Machayev of Chametz? You know, Sam and I were talking about this earlier. Bali Rabbi Yibotze, is the ownership over the Chametz or the Rishus or the control over the Chametz? So, for example, you have many cases where the Chametz is Rishuso, but he doesn't have Bailus. Is it enough to have Rishuso in order to generate a Chiyuv of Bali Rabbi Yibotze? My Rebbe of Salvation, he always asks the question, what's Machayev Kriyas HaTorah? What's the Machayev of Kriyas HaTorah on Sheni V'Chamishi, on Shabbos, on Moedim? And he would declare whether it's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah that's Machayev, or the Kedushas Hayom is Machayev. I mean, again, it's endless. I mean, again, I'd love to put that out on the table as a separate mafteach, but there's no question in my mind that you're asking Siva, you want to know what causes, what generates a Chiyuv. That's a fundamental question. I don't know why Rav Zevin feels compelled to make these somersaults in the air, convoluted cases that are very complicated, in order to justify his premise that Reb Chaim was very well aware that the distinction between cause and effect. But what I am fascinated by is a Reb Elchanan. Reb Elchanan wants to know why an almana. I'm sorry, why a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an almana? And this you'll see in Dr. Solomon on page 30, on page 28, which I think you photocopied.
Yeah.
This I found absolutely fascinating. And the honest to goodness truth is, I sense intuitively that we're stepping into a gold mine here. That I've been around the block for a while, and I never confronted this kind of chakira, and he has it from Reb Elchanan, Kovetz Ha'aretz of Reb Elchanan. And the sugya here that Rabbi Chanan is addressing is in Masechta Horios. Maybe that's why I'm not aware of it, because I never learned Horios. And Gemara has Boy Binei Rav Amir of Nachman. What's the deal with a Kohen Gadol Shenitztara? He's a Mitzora. And at this point, he's Pasul Lavoda L'Shamesh B'Tor Kohen Gadol. Ma'u Belmana. Is he allowed to marry an Almana? Honestly, when I saw this Gemara, I thought this is crazy. A Kohen Gadol is a Kohen Gadol. Okay, he's Nebuch, he's a Mitzora, and he can't do the Avoda. But that doesn't mean Paka Mine, he's Kapalish Mach, he's no longer Kohen Gadol, and he's now allowed to marry an Almana. So Rochanan uses this Boy Mine Rava Mirav Nachman to illustrate a Mafteach, as I call it, a class or a structure of a Chakira. He says that there are two categories of Isurim which relate to an individual who has certain Isurim. One category is that as soon as that person is in the status of whatever that status might be, for example, in the case of a Kohen Hedged, he becomes appointed as a Kohen Gadol, then the Isurim are inherent in the very moment of his becoming a Kohen Gadol. The other way is to say no, that the fact that he was appointed and he became a Kohen Gadol, that generates a status of a Kohen Gadol that's continuous, because continuously he does the avodah and he's meshamish as a Kohen Gadol, but it's not inherent in the original appointment. So let's look at Rebbe Chanan's language. He says the following: Zeshe Kohen Gadol Aser Be'almana Yesh Lefarsha B'Shnei Ponim Aleph B'Shosh Enase Kohen Gadol. I would emphasize the word Shenase Nesar Be'almana Iser Olam. I would say in Yiddish Alts Licht in the Minu. You know, everything is inherent in the Minu. Once you've established the Kohen Gadol, then he's a Kohen Gadol. Fartig and Esek. I don't have to ask one moment after the other. He's a Kohen Gadol, and there's an Isra Almana, the Kohen Gadol, that's inherent in his Minui, in his Nasa Kohen Gadol. Or B, Yesh Lomar, Dezesha Oser B'Almana, Eno B'Shvil. Again, here I would emphasize the word Tchiloso, Shas Minuyo. The Iser of Almanu Kohen Gadol is not inherent in the Minui. El Shah Iser Chalala Bechol Shah Mitnesha Akshav Hu Kohen Gadol before. In other words, every moment he's a Kohen Gadol because he acts as a Kohen Gadol. He implements his status as a Kohen Gadol through the Shivush, through the Avodah that he does. And the Iser of Almana is now generated by the Kohen Gadol Befal, not because of the Tchiloso and Minuyo, but because of the ongoing situation.
You're modifying it over here, not because he is a Kohen Gadol, but because he does the Avodah, because you want to get to your punchline. But the usual way to phrase is the middle, that it's just what you are, not what happened to you.
Right, Rebbe Chanan is saying Befal.
Sure, because you have to. Because otherwise
why is it something you're Rav Nachman? Right? So again, I honestly, Sam, I don't understand Rav Nachman. The whole idea of Kohen Gadol Befoel makes no sense to me. It rubs me the wrong way.
If I remember correctly, there's Gemara, there's an Indian in Shkolim that the Kohen Gadol, if he is Tomei, if he can't do the Avodah like he's Tomei, he can be Metame for parents. But once he's out,
right? But you know what I would say, Herb, in that case, it could be that there's one Iser Kahuna for a Kohen that has to do with Tumas Mes that depends on is generated by his state of Tara. If he's already in the state of Tumah. But this concept here is mind boggling.
It's different.
Who would, you know, if a Talmud said to me in my Shia, I don't mean a Talmud in your age bracket, I'm talking about an 18-year-old. That's what I did most of my life. I taught 18-year-olds. If he would get up in Shir and say to me that the dinam of the Kohen Gadol and the Isurim of the Kohen Gadol are generated every moment of his career as a Kohen Gadol, I would throw him out of Shir for saying such a thing. That's fakrumt. And yet Rabbi Chanan, again, I'm not blaming Rabbi Chanan because he's trying to justify it side in Rav Nachman, that this Kohen Gadol is Asur, in this case, to an Almana, because by virtue of the fact that now, right now, he's a Kohen Gadol. And again, as Sam points out, now he's acting as a Kohen Gadol, but now he's a Kohen. Not because, see, the whole concept of he's undermining my whole, you know, I feel like the ground below my feet is shaking because there's a concept called Chalushen Gavra. That's so basic to me, you know, in my worldview of halacha, that I can't undermine that. He's undermining the whole halacha of a chal shem gavra. What's a chal shem gavra? You've transformed the person. He now has a new status. I don't have to ask myself every moment of his life from henceforth until the day that until death do us part, is he still have that status? He has that status because there's a change. There's an existential change, so to speak, in the person. No, that's not the din. Unless, by the way, it could be I'm way off the mark here, and maybe there's a separate din in the Israel Mana here that maybe you know, Rebbe Chanan doesn't mean to say that all the dinim of Kohen Gadol depend upon the befoal. You know, he became a mitzaris, he's ois Kohen Gadol. Some reason he, you know, we have to pinpoint the Israel Mana of Kohen Gadol. Yeah, I don't know. But Rabosai, here's the punchline of this whole discussion. Rabbi Chanan wants to answer a kasha at the beginning of Tosfos, at the beginning of Masechta Yevamos. The Mishnah says that if a woman falls for Yibum, and she's not just Eishes Achim, but she's in addition another Erevah, like two brothers that marry two sisters, and as long as the sister is alive, she becomes Achos Ishto. So in addition to being Eishes Achim, she's also Achos Ishto, then the Gemara says that there's no Zikas Yibum, and even the Tzara, if she has another wife when her husband dies, even that other wife doesn't fall for Yibum because the Tzara's Everfectase is. If there's a lot of erva, and erva undermines the zikas yibum, what about anida? Anida is an erva. So Rav Chanan has a long piece here, which he summarizes on pages 24 to 25, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, excuse me, maybe 26 to 27, to explain that anida is different than our classical erva. Says Rav Chanan, in the case of a classical Erevah, the very moment she became an Erevah, that establishes Leolam Vaed, the Iser Erevah. So for example, if she was born to be his sister, so the Iser Erevah Machoso is inherent in that moment of Minui, if you follow my my parallelism here. Masha'enke Nida, he says it's not inherent in her becoming a Nida, but that every split second the Iser Nida is generated, the Erva of Nida is generated by the fact that she still is a Nida. And why? Because the state of Nida is something that's built into nature and it's going to change, it comes and it goes. That's a Vesis, right? So Rav Chanan, in order to convince us, because he must have sensed that it was a chutzpah noir of him to come and answer a kash of Tosis, he gives us this parallel from the Sugyan Horios to show you that this structure is a very valid structure. Again, you're comparing a Boydim and Polis. See, I wouldn't compare Kohen Gadol and Almana with the Iser Erev of Anido and all that. But he's saying that it's very interesting that Rav Chanan himself is giving us a Derech HaLimud. Rav Chanan feels compelled to show that some similar structure in a mirror image appears within the halachic universe. And what is that? The question of whether the Iser of Almana Kohen Gadol is inherent in the original Minui, or it's a continuously generated, spontaneously generated for the entire career of the Kohen Gadol. So too here, how do we view Nida? Do we say at the very moment that she became a Nida, that Iser Erev of a Nida continues, or do we say no? That every moment that she has the Nidus, that's what generates the Iser. And he wants to suggest, Rav Chanan, that as far as the din of Zikas Yibum is concerned, you need an Erva which is Li'olam Vard. Again, there's no such thing as an Erva Li'olam Vard. I mean, an Eishes Ish is also an Erva, but that's not Li'olam Vard. We don't believe in Catholic marriages, right?
Neither is a sister.
And neither is a sister, because if his sister dies, then she's allowed to marry him, right? But Rav Chanan is saying that's because a new action came to remove. But inherently, the Iser is an Iser Olam, and that's when it knocks off the Zikas Yibu. So Rav Osar, I don't know exactly why Dr. Solomon quotes this Rav Chanan. He calls it Sibu Misovev. I don't believe for a million years that Rav Chanan had in mind Sibu Misovev. Rav Chanan wants to know what is the Iser? Is the Iser inherent in the Minui? You know, you've changed the status of a person, or no? It depends upon his Shimush as a Kohen Gadol on an ongoing basis. I don't think Rav Chanan in his wildest dreams knew that somebody was going to write a PhD thesis and quote his Chiddush as an example of Sibu Misovev. And Sibu Misovev is foreign to Rav Chanan, to Rav Chanan Wasserman as well. But I think I owe Dr. Solomon a tremendous debt of gratitude because I was unaware of the Sugyan Horios, and I was unaware of Rav Chanan in Kovetz Ha'oros. And now what I'd like to do with your help over the course of the next, I don't know what, as long as we continue to meet, to try to come up with a structure to explain this Rav Chanan. Where does it fit into the halachic universe that you could have a Chal Hashem Gavra that is totally dependent on every second injecting that status of the person? Again, if you're not talking about Chal Hashem Gavra, I can give you examples. You know, this halacha of Bebail of Imo in Shoel. So it means that if, let's say, you're working for me and I borrow your cow, then I don't have to pay for the loss of the cow. That's called the Bail of Imo. So there's a whole sugya in Bav Metzia. What happens if it was in Bail of Imo b'shas she'ela, but then he's no longer Bail of Imo b'shas shmuru mesa? So when the animal died, he was no longer working in his employment. There also you have Rav Chanan's chakira, meaning is it all totally in the tchila? So meaning since this she'ela was built on a Bail of Imo, that she'ela could never engender a chiyuv tashlum. Or do we say no, that she'ela is an ongoing continuous machayev, and therefore if at the moment the animal dies you're no longer the Bail of Imo, then who cares about the fact that the original she'ela was the Bail of Imo? But that's a heck of a throw from the case of Kohen Gadol. You know, to say that he's not a Kohen Gadol because now Nebuch he's a Mitzori can't do the Avodah, that's absolutely meshuga. Part of my getting passionate about this, but I get a little bit upset. You know,
what would Rav Chanan say about a Kohen who was married to an Almana and then became Kohen Gadol? Does he have to divorce her?
Oh yeah, that's a sugya in the third parak of Ksubas. Yeah. I don't remember the details. Even if I could remember the details, I'm too tired to try to remember.
It seems like that would...